Welcome, dear souls, to the Way of the Yogi Discretion Group. It is Sunday, February 27th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
And I'm Deborah Barclay.
And together we produce this podcast as an act of love for the practice and philosophies of yoga and as an act of service to the yoga community. With us today as well is our friend Suzanne.
Hello.
Way of the Yogi is evolving into its own special form of expression, just as we all are. Inevitably, there will be learning experiences and growing pains, and it is important to us that everyone be a part of guiding its course. We welcome any suggestions or observations you might have. You can post them at either www.wayoftheyogi.podbean.com or www.wayoftheyogi.blogspot.com. This is our second podcast, and we have decided to change the format slightly. We will be dividing our discussion into two parts and airing one segment each week following our meetings. During the first segment, we will all be sharing our experiences with the sutras discussed in the previous meeting. Then after the break, we'll return for an overview and discussion of the concepts of the next sutras up for exploration. Before we begin our discussion, Deborah has some announcements for us about events and opportunities for service in and around our community. Deborah?
Thank you, Zanna. A few that I have is, one is from the Planet Earth Yoga Studio, which is on 418 North 35th Street, and they have monthly events. The first one is called Earthlings Kirtan, which you and Suzanne have both gone to.
It was awesome. So much fun.
And that is the fourth Saturday of every month at 7 p.m., and we highly recommend that one. Mm-hmm. They also do a satsang, and that is every month. It's a spiritual talk and group meditation with awakened mystic Matt Kahn and meditation guide Julie Dittmar. That is, the next one coming up is March 20th, and that's from 1 to 3 p.m. The kirtan is a $5 requested donation. We also recommend checking out their website at www.planetearthyoga.com to see their other events and happenings.
And the class schedule.
And the class schedule. We also have an outdoor asana and meditation practice that's coming up, and this one is in April from the 17th to the 22nd. It's more of a retreat, it looks like. Mm-hmm. Learn backpacking skills, flora and fauna of the desert, and wilderness ethics. That is $995 for the week per person, and that looks like a lot of fun. That one can be found on, is that kaffaadventures.com?
Mm-hmm, looks like it, yeah.
www.kaffaadventures.com.
That's K-F-A-A-K-F-A-D-V-E-N-T-U-R-E-S. And I'd also like to mention the Yoga Behind Bars.
Okay.
Workshop is on March 13th. And you can go to www.yogabehindbars.com to find out more about that.
Okay, thank you, Zana. Mm-hmm. And we also wanted to recommend the Finney Ridge Yoga Center, and that's at the Finney Ridge, or the Finney Yoga House, which is at 6615 Dayton Avenue North. And you can find them at finneyridgeyoga.com online. They have a series of classes as well as, I don't know if you'd call these workshops, but they're more ongoing. Mm-hmm. There's yoga with cancer, mm-hmm. yoga for MS, yoga for traumatic brain injuries, huh. Yoga for healing backs. So it's it looks really interesting for just therapeutic.
Yeah.
And that's at Finney Ridge Yoga again. And the last one I have is a meditation class. This is a Learn to Meditate, and that's happening both in March. Options 1 and 2, you can either do it during the week or on the weekends. And that's at the Sri Chinmoy Center at 5651 University Way Northeast. And if you have questions about that, you can feel free to call them at 206-322-2600.
Thank you. Yeah. And just one other thing about the Yoga Behind Bars, that is for people who wish to serve or to do service work through their yoga by teaching yoga to people who are incarcerated. Mm-hmm. So that's really valuable stuff. Okay, so let's go ahead and just sit back take a moment. Oh, first of all, actually, wait a minute. We have to thank our host tonight.
Right.
Yes. Okay, that's right. We're at Bedlam Coffee, Tea, and Toast on 2nd and Bell in downtown Seattle. Thank you very much for allowing us this space this evening. We're very happy to be here. All right, now let's go ahead and sit back, take a moment, find a comfortable position, close your eyes, and relax your belly, relax your shoulders, relax your jaw and your tongue, and relax your forehead and your eyes. Let's all just take a nice deep breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. Now just allow the attention and focus to come fully into the room, fully into the present moment. Turn down the volume on the thoughts. And let's leave our day, everything we've experienced so far, and everything that we might have planned for this evening or tomorrow or next week, let's leave that all outside the door. Allow ourselves to become fully present, fully here and now. Allow our hearts to open as well as our minds. Know that no matter what's going on in the outside world, there's nowhere else to be and nothing else to do but be here now, in this moment, with one another on our shared journey. So let's begin tonight by just going over what we talked about last week, or 2 weeks ago, actually, now, I guess.
Yeah.
It's been a little while. And actually, I do want to start tonight. I realized that last week, I know that I kind of have been somewhat facilitating these talks, but I really want everybody to know that I'm as much a novice on these subjects as anybody here. And this entire process is a journey of edification for myself as much as for anyone else. And I'm not here really to teach anything. I'm here to learn, just like everyone else. And I'm here to learn through my own experience as well as yours. So I really appreciate the fact that we're all here together. And I'm enjoying this and I'm growing by it. I really am. So thank you. All right, well, we examined the first two sutras last time. The first one, Atta Yoga Nushasanam, which means through the two translations that we have, the first one, Satchidananda, now the exposition of yoga is being made. And the second one by Iyengar, with prayers for divine blessings, now begins an exposition of the sacred art of yoga. And Suzanne, you brought in this book today by Alistair Shearer.
Yes.
So his first one is, go ahead and say it.
Number one.
Uh-huh.
And now the teachings on yoga begins.
Okay. So
yoga is the settling of the mind into silence.
Okay, that's the second one. Right. Mm-hmm. So basically, we talked about what yoga was to each of
right.
us,
uh-huh.
And I said that yoga is my anchor. And when I was listening back through the podcast, I listened to it back through it a couple of times. We all had some really good things to say about what yoga meant to us personally. And I think the most important thing is that it is a practice.
Mm.
You know, it's
yeah.
it's something that you actually do.
Right.
You know, and that's probably the most important thing. It's not simply a conceptual, philosophical, airy-fairy kind of, collection of ideas. It's something that you can actually put into practice and experience on a visceral level. And I think that's really important.
Have it be tangible to each one of us in our own way, in our own need.
Yeah, exactly. And that is one of the things that makes it so beautiful to me, because it's intensely personal that way.
Yeah, right. No matter how many people are in a group class, there's so many different things happening.
Everybody feels it a little differently and processes it a little differently.
Right, yeah. Everybody's at a different place in their practice. You know, everyone has different...
Needs,
different abilities, different levels of expertise or ability, and everyone's practice is their own, is their very own. But even so, we all are being brought to the same place. No matter how diverse each one's experience is, the end result is the same.
Uh-huh.
We can share and learn from each other.
That's right.
And that is very powerful.
Very powerful. Very powerful.
Yeah.
The second sutra, Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Oh, I guess that's all right.
Sounded good to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so Satchidananda, you can... Since you've got the Satchidananda, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, it's the restraint of the modifications of the mind stuff is yoga.
Iyengar, yoga is the cessation of the movements of the in the consciousness. And Alistair, what's his name?
Schaefer.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Sure.
There we go.
And this is his translation of Patanjali's. And number two is yoga is the settling of the mind into silence.
I like that.
Yeah.
I do.
Which sounds to me a little more easy to understand.
Yeah,
that
it does. It makes a lot of sense. And that is exactly, what it is. It's about silencing those thoughts, silencing all that noise.
What we're striving for.
Right.
Because once the mind is silent,
then the soul can shine through. So last episode, when I was going through the actual meaning of each of the words in the translated meanings, in this particular sutra, yoga is spelled differently. It's Y-O-G-A-H, and it has a slightly different connotation. In the first sutra, yoga is just Y-O-G-A, and it's contemplation or integration. No, is it integration? So, let's see. It's joining contemplation, right, and concentration, right, that's it. And in the second sutra with the H on it, remember we said it was union from the outermost layer to the innermost sheath? And you'd ask me what that implied, right? And I tried to give an answer, but I wasn't really prepared for your question. So it really did. But I don't think that my answer was as clear as it could have been.
As full as you would have liked.
Yeah, exactly. Because I wasn't ready. So
That's the learning process.
So I want to elaborate on that one a little bit further.
Good.
So our sense perceptions, what they call are the tanmatras, so that sight, sound, smell, touch, hearing, and taste, right? And that's the only way that we're able to perceive the material world, right? Or so we think. And it gives us a very limited version of total reality. So if you think about, for example, like microwaves or ultraviolet light, we don't have the sensory ability to perceive those things. You know, we're just not equipped with that. So we only have access to certain bandwidths of information. So we have to kind of fill in the blanks. And we were talking about, who was that? No, we were talking about that yesterday, filling in the blanks. Somebody was talking about that.
You and somebody.
Yeah. Me and somebody. And it was one of you two. I know it was because...
One of us might remember.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about how we have to fill in the blanks on things. Wasn't that you?
I think it's not starting to sound
familiar. Yeah, that was you. That was you. Yeah, definitely. So, and just by inference or by, you
right,
know what I mean?
Right. Yes. Just by extension of what we do know.
Exactly.
We have to make leaps. I mean, some of those are leaps of faith and some of them are just guesses.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We do that naturally, visually, auditorially, and a lot of times without even knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it would stand to follow. We would need to do it in other areas as well.
Exactly. So the integration of our sensory perceptions of material reality with the discerning facility of our Atman, okay? So our outer layers with the inner sheath, right? That integration, it takes us beyond the illusion of our partial reality.
Okay.
And does give us the ability to see reality in its totality, which is basically to be able to find the diversity in the unity in the diversity, and to recognize that everything is actually one great whole. Mm-hmm. And to recognize that we are a part of that and it is all a part of us. You know. So it takes, that's the integration. That's what I wanted to say, but didn't quite know how to say it.
So we're striving for that, whether we really realize it or not?
I think so, yeah. I really do.
Because I don't know that everybody...
We all want to be a part of something, but we don't know what it is.
Yes.
I know in my life, all of my life, I've had some kind of an abandonment issue. You know what I mean?
I do.
I've been trying to fill a hole all my life with whatever.
Yes, we tend to find things that aren't the best for us.
That's right. That's
the most
right.
Healthy.
To just be a part of something.
Yep.
To be a part of something.
And what have we learned with that?
That it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It really doesn't work.
And I think each and every one of us can find that in ourselves, that it doesn't work because it's not outside.
That's right. It's within. And that is exactly the integration that we're looking for. It's to become a part of, to not become a part of, because we already are, but to have the realization that we are a part of. The conscious contact. Yeah, like the AA are saying. Mm-hmm. Conscious contact. That's one
the
of their...
The 12-steppers.
The 12-steppers, yeah. They have that. Conscious contact. I like that. So, yoga basically is the study of our thoughts, leading us to be able to come to a state of absence of thoughts, or that silence that Shearer talks about, that beautiful silence. Did you want to say something else? Oh yeah, we're going to get to that. Yeah. So we also talked about the koshas, the sheaths of being. Okay, and the lens of consciousness. Has anybody had any experiences with that?
Not in the past couple weeks.
Yeah, in the last couple weeks, that lens of consciousness, that the reacting to things that we see as seemingly real, but maybe perhaps aren't. Or didn't turn out quite that way.
Yeah. I don't know. I might need a minute to think about that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I know. I have a dear loved one who, I mean, I'm sure we all have. But I have a dear loved one. I know this isn't my personal experience, but there was just some things that were happening where someone in the family lost a job, and... it was just this huge turmoil that it caused. And I'm sitting back going, no, no, there's a reason. Wait. Just wait. You know, there's a reason for this. You know, we're all, it's everything happens so that we're led to where we should be and everything. And they're all like, oh, no, it's all awful. And of course, you know, it turns out that, yes, there is an opportunity for a much better,
okay.
Yeah, something that's much more fitting, a position that's much more fitting.
Wow.
And that's going to actually be more beneficial to her advancement in her career. So, after all, you know, and so all the turmoil, all the sickness that it caused, all the physical distress that it caused, my dear loved one, was not really necessary. It had just, you know, been able
it's
to.
Hard to stay in the moment.
It is hard,
especially
to stay
when the moment is painful.
It really is. It really
and
is.
And losing a job is a painful
and
thing.
And you know, yeah.
I
yeah,
do.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I know too. I mean, I by choice left my job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was really hard. I mean, coming out of a comfortable situation, even though it was very stressful, it was still a comfort zone for me.
And it's stepping into something that's scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether you choose it or not.
Right.
Is scary.
Yeah.
It's frightening. We don't know. That's where we have to rely on the inner strength, which is what we're working to come closer to.
Right.
Yeah. I think a part of it too is, you know, we seem to attach a lot of our identity to our jobs and our work. And losing that, you know, can really wear at, and you think, well, who am I if I don't have that, you know?
Yeah.
Where do I fit in this world? Again, like that connection.
We have a lot of self-esteem attached to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think identity as well, though.
Yeah.
I think, you know.
They probably go together.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We judge our self-worth.
Yeah.
We judge our self-worth by what we attach ourselves to.
A lot of external things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Measurements that perhaps are not the
true measure of our worth.
That's the soundest way to do it.
Yeah. Exactly.
But we do.
Because those
we're
things
human.
Can be lost in an instant.
In an instant.
Yeah. And yet we are still just as worthy as ever.
We are still who we were
exactly.
the day
right.
before.
Exactly.
You know? So that's, you know, comes
exactly.
into the
our essence is still the same. Exactly. Yeah, and we'll be getting more into that too as well.
Into
those measures of
our essence
of well those definitions of who of what we are of how we define ourselves. That's something that we're going to talk about in our second part here.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, and we talked about mindfulness as well last time. So the awareness, being able to be aware of what's going on in our lives, and why that's so important and pertinent to this work. Right?
Do you think it comes down in some fashion to being level of awareness, conscious or unconscious?
Definitely. The entire reason for all of this work is to be able to come to that state of silence in the mind to connect with the soul. But that's not to say that we're coming into a state of being comatose, you know what I mean? It's not a deadness of mind. It's more like the level of awareness that, say, a deer in the woods has, where they're aware of everything
all
going on around them.
All their senses are heightened.
The senses are heightened completely, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of, but the mind is still at the same time. So you're acutely aware on a level that you wouldn't be otherwise. I mean, you're aware of what's going on inside of you as well as outside of you, and what the connection between everything is. You know, so it's a state of awareness that unless we have the discipline of yoga to back it up, and unless we have the foundation that yoga lays for us, it would probably be a level of awareness that would likely drive someone mad.
That's just what I was thinking as you were saying that. It's like, we, you know, maybe I don't really want to go there. I was like, whoa, that might be way too much.
I mean, but can you imagine just having that to be able to? I mean, one of the things that they do describe is all these siddhis, these powers that yogis.
Oh yeah.
That yogis
manifest.
Gain by through the practice of yoga, and the reason behind them is this acute awareness. You know, you become just you're so connected that you know things intuitively.
I only want to know myself.
Yes.
I only want to be at peace and comfort within myself.
And that is what they absolutely admonish you to maintain sight of, or admonish us to maintain sight of, is that all these other things that come along with it are traps. Mm-hmm. They're still traps.
But can you be without it, since that idea of we're all connected, like we are a part of this larger entity, that, you know, can we shut that out once we have the awareness of the connection?
It's not so much that we shut it out, but we humble ourselves, I think, to that connection and live in the realization that although we have this great awareness and these possible advantages through that, that's not the purpose. The purpose is still to be there, to be in the practice for the sake of the practice and for the sake of reaching out to the higher consciousness. Okay. and the connection,
the positive connection, the positive all the positive energy that is attributed to perhaps the collective. Mm-hmm. That will help sustain us. Right. Within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And not that it's going to be an imposition from outside. It's like, oh my God. It's like, oh. But that it's like, oh, this is comfortable. This is warm. This is blissful isn't quite right.
Yeah, blissful is right.
Well,
it's exactly right.
It sounds a little woo woo, but that's, you kind of feel that. I mean,
that's the word though. Bliss. Ananda.
Bliss. Ananda.
Yeah. Bliss is the
so
word.
It's, you know, it's a positive reaffirmation of us, of each of us individually, and the strength and the power and the value within each of us, and how it touches everything. Mm-hmm. And how everything touches us.
And how it's all connected.
And it's all connected.
Absolutely.
Without judgment.
Without judgment. So not necessarily that it's even positive. It just is.
It just is. That's the point I wanted to make. Yeah. That it's not good, it's not bad, it's not this, it's not that. It just
simply is.
It's the acceptance of what is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's really a very valid and important point to make. And another thing that yoga really teaches us is to drop the judgment. I know in the practice of asana, one of the things I say when we're right at the end of the centering,
yeah,
is always to practice with self-compassion and without self-judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So important. I hear students all the time say, oh, well, that guy was doing that asana so perfectly. I looked around me and he was touching his head to the floor. And, you know,
yeah,
and I'm like, but that's not the point.
Yeah. Right.
You know, we don't pay attention to what the other person's doing.
Right.
Because like we said at the very beginning tonight, it's about our practice.
Right.
I think in our society, however, we're so conditioned to be judged and to judge, mm-hmm, that it's really hard to step out and step back and
it
go,
really is.
No. That's not helpful to anybody for mm-hmm. anything. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very much what we've grown up with. Yes. So it takes an extra level of awareness mm-hmm. to step out of it.
Yep, and that's what the practice of asana mm-hmm. helps us to establish in the first place. And then through that continual, repetitive, over and over, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to judge, during practice, eventually it just automatically carries off the mat. I have every day in my personal practice, I have different things come up on my mat that I suddenly find myself repeating in the coffee shop or, you know, and it's a completely different situation, a different setting, mm-hmm. you know, everything. But the essential lesson,
the awareness,
the core principle applies mm-hmm. of something that I experienced that morning on my mat. And it's a beautiful thing. And the fact that I'm able to make the connection between the two also is also, mm-hmm. that's another benefit.
Mm-hmm.
It's another benefit. My awareness is growing and growing.
Right. Yeah, I think the awareness strengthens the act itself. Mm-hmm. Because when you see yourself removing the judgment, you're like, oh, wow, that worked, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you continue to do it and it feels stronger.
It does.
Like we just said about being connected to everything, that's kind of what I'm understanding you saying. It's like, okay, in the asanas, I was feeling this and so forth, and then look, I go out into the world, and there's that connection, there's that awareness, there's that aha.
Aha. That's right, the aha we talked about. Right. So we also talked about the disconnect last time and the fact that our society conditions us to disconnect on a regular basis.
Oh, right, right, right.
Have we had any experiences? Has it become more noticeable, that disconnect? I know for me, just as a kind of a crazy little example, I have become more aware of being over-consumerist. I really have. I mean, something as simple as leaving the water on when I'm brushing my teeth, you know, mm-hmm. instead of just allowing it to run. I noticed the other day, we were talking about this the other day, I'm brushing my teeth and the water's running. I'm like, wait a minute, why am I doing that? Every drop counts.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I'm so used to just having water there and it being just, it's there. And it's always, in my mind, always gonna be there. However, if I do this and everybody in the world does this, eventually it's gonna run out. When I throw away a piece of garbage or a piece of recycling even, recycling is maybe not so bad because I'm hoping it gets recycled. Although, depending on whether, you know, it's too dirty or whatever, it might not. It might get tossed back in the landfill. But when I throw something in the garbage, I picture everyone else on my block.
The connection.
Everyone else in the city. And I picture all these armies of garbage trucks just flowing out of the city and down to the landfill. And I picture every city in America and every city on earth. And it's just, it's like, wow. You know, so I'm no longer so disconnected. I don't know if any of you guys have had
experience. Similar with the recycling, going out of town and visiting family in towns that they don't do it.
Oh,
so you have to throw everything, like glass,
it's painful. It's like,
hard.
Oh no, that's wrong.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
You really see that.
You really
feel it. It's visceral.
Yes.
It is.
You know? It is.
It is.
Yeah.
So that's a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
Just that, you know, our act of consuming and discarding things, the connection with the whole universe, or earth, really, that has.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people, like, well, you know, if it's not part of your lifestyle, you don't have that connection. I don't think that they do. I mean, from my experience of people, like family members that live in places that don't recycle, they don't even think about it. They're, like, well, why?
The trite phrase, their consciousness has not been raised to be aware.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we're doing on all kinds of levels. I mean, that's a...
Exactly.
The garbage and recycling is a good visual of
that. Yeah.
But I think what we're trying to do is raise our consciousness in ways that we're not even aware of how it's going to affect us or how we're going to perceive it, other than it will just be good.
Consequences, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Consequences and ramifications.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
It'll be good for us individually and good for us collectively.
So all of these things together help us to come to a point where we can be at peace enough with ourselves that we are raising our own awareness and that we are actually making the effort to do what we can so that we can find that tranquility and actually begin to still those fluctuations in the mind, those things that rise up and bring us turmoil, you know.
I do.
Yes, absolutely. Let's see, is there anything else here? So, as a little end here to the first segment, has anybody had any experiences? I know we talked about perceptions versus reality. And projections versus outcomes last time. Does anyone have any experiences with that in the last couple weeks? Anything that's come up specifically?
No, nothing.
I kind of cited my hip last time, and how I could have taken it to some crazy extrapolations and
to the worst case scenario,
worst case scenarios, and all that, right. And in fact, once I did see the X-rays and I saw exactly what was going on structurally, it's all muscular, and I have been doing massage, yoga therapy, and also some rehabilitative Pilates on their equipment, on the Pilates equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had an immense amount of relief and a profound already.
Do you think part of it can be mental?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. I do. I think part of it can be mental. I think even though on the surface I was professing not to allow it to bother me, probably deep down inside somewhere, my subconscious mm-hmm. that we talked about, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I think that was still...
Because the stress usually... We usually go to the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. It just...
Yeah, and it's just natural. It's just natural.
It is. And part of, I think, being in touch and connected is, no, wait a minute. You know, we don't need to go there. Let's mm-hmm. just accept this moment mm-hmm. now and mm-hmm. deal with... And I do strongly believe in mind-body connection.
Absolutely. And I know in my yoga postures now, I've dialed back my practice. Mm-hmm. And I have a level of... I thought I was being really aware while I was practicing before. But now... there is a level of mindfulness and awareness in my practice now that I didn't have before.
And doing something flat out is not necessarily being aware.
That's right.
And I think a lot of us tend to do that to ourselves.
Right.
I'll just push it as hard as I can and I'll achieve what it is I want. And that's not mindful.
No, that's ego.
Right.
Exactly.
I was practicing through my ego. I really was. I will admit it. I'll be the first to admit it. I was practicing the
mantra. Everybody does. Like you were saying, somebody in your class looks up and goes, look at what they're doing. Their head's touching the ground. I mean, what is that?
That's ego.
That's ego. Mm-hmm. And it is not the most beneficial place to be. So being mindful is what is needful of your body and your existence. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need this and you need that. Mm-hmm. But yeah. You have to listen. You have to tune in.
Definitely.
You have to.
And you have to be without judgment when you do it.
Without judgment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up this half of our discussion today. And so namaste, and thank you all for your wonderful and inspiring contributions.
Namaste.
Please check out our website, www.wayoftheyogi.com, for the link to this podcast. It is currently still under construction, but we hope to have it fully functioning very soon.
And we're going to pause for a break now, and when we return, we'll pick up with the next two sutras of the Samadhipada.